And welcome to Topical Currents. I'm Bonnie Berman. Joseph Cooper returns on Monday. Well, the Jewish holiday of Hanukkah begins tonight. Tomorrow, of course, is that most American of holidays, Thanksgiving. But this year, it's also the first full day of the Jewish Festival of Lights, and it's being called, as you've been hearing all day, Thanksgivica. So today we look at the 200-year history of Hanukkah in America with author and professor of religion studies at Rowan University in New Jersey, Diane Ashton. She's written Hanukkah in America, A History. And she joins us from Cherry Hill, New Jersey, I believe. Welcome, Professor.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Glad to have you. So let me begin with something that continues to puzzle me. Why does Hanukkah have, like, 50 different spellings, and how did you choose the spelling that you chose for the book, and is there a correct spelling?
Yes, the correct spelling is in Hebrew, of course, chet, nun, kaf, hey. Of course, the first letter, chet, has no equivalent sound in English. So people spell it in English any way that sounds right to them.
That's true. So this is the correct, H-A-N-U-K-K-A-H.
Oh, no, it's just one of many. I'm not saying it's correct incorrect.
Okay.
But it's been used, that spelling has been used by the New York Times since 1889. So I think it's an American tradition.
All right. So tell us how rare it is that these two holidays are at the same time.
Oh, it's exceedingly rare. The last time was in 1888. The next time will be in 2070. After that, it will be 2165. I mean, this is really rare.
And it's kind of interesting because both holidays, both Thanksgiving and Hanukkah, are times of giving thanks.
Right. That's absolutely right. So when this occurred in 1888, one of the Jewish newspapers in the U.S. at that time, on its front page, encouraged its readers to enthusiastically celebrate both holidays because both are occasions for thanking God.
That's interesting. So I'd like to turn, if you would, to the story of Hanukkah. What is this eight-day celebration for those who may not be familiar with it? And when did it begin?
So Hanukkah began as at least the celebration that we have it today, began with the writings of the early rabbis, and it was commemorating a rededication of the temple in Jerusalem that occurred in 164 BCE. The holiday that we know it today, the way we practice it today, was instituted a couple of hundred years after that. But it commemorates that 164 rededication of the temple in Jerusalem, which had been taken over and pillaged by a king of Assyria who had governed Judea at the time. And he had taken out the menorahs, the big oil lamps that had stood in the temple that really symbolized the presence of God. So when the temple was to be rededicated, they needed to make new menorahs. And they did that, but when they went to light the menorah, they only had a small flask of oil, as the story goes, and miraculously it lasted for 8 days. So we celebrate Hanukkah by lighting lights for 8 days.
Will you be doing that tonight?
Yes.
Okay. So Hanukkah is a modest holiday in Israel and in other Jewish communities in the world. Is that how it began in America 200 years ago, or was it observed back then at all?
You know, it's interesting that there's hardly any mention of people celebrating Hanukkah in the 19th century, certainly not before the very late 19th century. And Hanukkah is a celebration that occurs in people's homes. So we would look in letters and diaries to find mention of this, and we really don't.
I wonder why that was. Why do you think it wasn't?
Well, it is a minor festival. It's not one of the important events in the Jewish calendar. And it seems that it was just not valued too much by ordinary people.
So tell us when and why it began to change in the U.S. and the social, economic, the political, cultural forces that contributed to changing it.
This is a fascinating story to me. It begins with a debate among rabbis in the U.S. in the 19th century. Rabbis and people who were leaders of synagogues and Jewish communities. And there weren't very many rabbis in the U.S. at the time, but there were a lot of people who were sort of the most knowledgeable person in their community, and they were the leaders. And they all debated with each other how should Judaism survive in the U.S.? What do we need to do to make it last? Which way of doing things was the best way? Because the Reform movement was growing at the time, and that was very novel, and traditionalists certainly opposed it. And so this was a very lively debate. What happened was each side in that debate looked to the Maccabees, the heroes of the Hanukkah story, and said that they were Maccabees for the modern age. So their debates actually educated American Jewry on the importance of the Maccabees. And that, I think, was really the spark that set this whole movement off of American Jews thinking that Hanukkah really has meaning, special meaning for them.
So I guess it had different meaning for different people. And different
yes.
people would express it differently.
Yes. Some people said that the Maccabees made changes, and so Reform said that they were going to make the changes that would help Judaism to survive. Other people said, well, the Maccabees were defending tradition, and so the traditionalists said they were the Maccabees who would help Judaism to survive. But both sides saw the Maccabees as great leaders in American Jewish, in Jewish history, and wanted to apply that to American Jewish life.
Now, at the time that this was happening in America, was it also being changed in other places in the world, or was it still remaining the same?
It was not undergoing this kind of change anywhere else. People did, of course, observe Hanukkah, but as a minor festival.
As it was.
Yes.
So how did the changes in celebrating Hanukkah parallel changes in Christmas? Go ahead.
No, those changes began in the late 19th century once Christmas, the domestic celebrations of Christmas that we know, the tree in homes, the gifts to children, the decorations, the family gatherings, those kinds of celebrations for Christmas really became very popular in the late 19th century in the U.S. And, of course, it was tied to a growth of a consumer marketplace.
Mm-hmm.
Department stores were growing, and we know today that holidays are big business in the U.S., and Hanukkah participated in that growth.
Actually, they're getting bigger. I mean, they were advertising Christmas before Halloween this year.
It gets earlier every year.
I know. It's really amazing. So did Hanukkah actually borrow many of the Christmas traditions because they didn't want the kids to feel left out, usually during December?
Yes, they did. What happened was that because most Jewish children went to public school, and there they encountered a lot of Christmas singing of songs and Christmas assemblies, and they learned that, oh, their Christian classmates were getting all these gifts. So rabbis and parents and teachers said, you know, we have to do something for our children. Otherwise, they're really not going to be happy to be Jews at this time of year. We have to give them an experience that makes them not only happy to be Jews, but also will give them, you know, strong memories of childhood, of happy occasions surrounding Jewish celebrations that will sustain them as they grow up.
So did it become as commercialized as Christmas, would you say?
Well, I do know that these days you hear rabbis saying, you know, remember the meaning of the holiday, don't get caught up in the commercialism, the same way we hear ministers and priests saying, don't get overwhelmed by the commercialism of Christmas.
Well, do you think that the commercialization undermined the religious significance?
I don't think so, to be honest, because Hanukkah is a domestic celebration, and so families create the holiday celebration that really suits them. The ritual requirements for Hanukkah are very simple. You just light the candle for the evening, and you recite a short blessing, and that's really all that's required of you. So to make a whole celebration out of that, people add games and food and songs and decorations and presents, and this makes a very warm, lively family event. And I think that most of us will agree that there's a tremendous demand on our time as families, and it's really important, and we find even greater value than previously in these occasions when families can get together. So from my perspective, if that includes store-bought items and gifts and participating in the commerce of America, which just about every facet of our life does, so be it.
We're speaking with Professor Diane Ashton. She's an author, and she teaches religion studies at Rowan University, where she was the former director of the American Studies program. Her latest book is entitled Hanukkah in America, a history. On today's Topical Currents, we're going to take a short break. We'll come back and we'll give the phone number. Maybe you have a question about Hanukkah or you want to share an experience, and we'll take that break and we'll be right back. And welcome back to today's Topical Currents. Bonnie Berman here with you. We thank you for joining us. We're visiting with Professor Diane Ashton. She's a professor of religion studies at Rowan University, and her book is Hanukkah in America, A History. If you want to join in the conversation with a question for the professor or a comment, the number is 1-800-743-9576. That's 1-800-743-9576, or you can email radio at WLRN.org. That's radio at WLRN.org. So, Professor Ashton, going back, we were in the late 19th century. How did things change again in the 20th century? Did it become even bigger?
Oh, yes, it certainly became bigger. Not surprisingly, it's because the Jewish population became so much bigger. Between 1881 and 1924, over 2 million Jews came to the U.S. from Eastern Europe, and they brought an immigrant experience that was really very different, and they adjusted to the U.S. in the 20th century at a time when the country itself was undergoing a lot of change. It was industrializing, it was urbanizing, and so these people settled mostly in cities and worked in factories to begin with.
Mm-hmm. And tell us more about that. I mean, more about what was going on.
Well, what we see happening with Hanukkah in their communities, particularly in New York, in the Lower East Side, which was probably the most famous and largest Jewish community in the U.S. at the time, Hanukkah became an occasion for concerts when Jewish schools would hire great cantors, or any cantor they could afford, for a public Hanukkah concert, and that would be a way that they would raise money for their school and for the congregation. And so these Hanukkah concerts became the standard way of celebrating Hanukkah in those immigrant communities, and this lasted for a few decades. And it was a wonderful way. It brought people together from lots of different congregations and people who didn't belong to any congregations, because Jews had a wide variety of perspectives on religious life, but they could all go to a concert and enjoy the music. So that was certainly one thing that emerged distinctive to that community. But we also see in Jewish newspapers of the time, in the Yiddish newspapers, that people were urged to buy presents, and presents was one of the first English words, among the first English words, to appear in the Yiddish press. And it meant presence at Hanukkah. And an immigrant could sort of measure their adjustment to America, their success in America, by the fact that they could afford to buy presents for their child at Hanukkah.
So like the emerging middle class.
I think it was long before they got to middle class, but yes.
Right.
It was a reassurance for them. Mm-hmm.
Well, let's talk about that. We used to have Hanukkah gelt, and I guess, you know, we still, I mean, that's a tradition in Hanukkah, and I guess we still have it. You see it in those little net bags. Tell us the history of the Hanukkah gelt and how it did become this gift-giving holiday.
Well, the Hanukkah gelt was a tradition from Eastern Europe. Children would get small change at Hanukkah as sort of a gift, but they were really expected to give part of that to their teachers. So Hanukkah has always been associated with support for education as well. But this was really a very small donation and a small gift to children. But those are the immigrants who came to the U.S. and then learned to give presents.
And what kind of presents did they used to give?
Well, they would give anything the child wanted that the parents could afford. I have to admit that I have seen two things going on with presence at Hanukkah. On the one hand, we see newspaper editors and rabbis and Jewish organizational leaders saying, buy gifts for your children so that they won't envy their Christian playmates and they'll be happy at Hanukkah. Mm-hmm. But I also see parents resisting that and buying very practical things. Yes, they'll give a toy, whatever is age-appropriate for their child that they think is a good kind of toy for the child to have. But parents over eight nights often give very practical items. You know, if you live in a cold climate, you get sweaters. You get pajamas. These are not exciting gifts. And sometimes parents really resist the whole commercialism and give very practical things like school supplies.
Hmm. We have a caller. I want to give the number out again if you have a question for Professor Diane Ashton and her book, Hanukkah in America, A History. It's 1-800-743-9576. 1-800-743-9576. And Marcia would like to ask you or comment on something in Plantation. Welcome to Topical Currents, Marcia.
Thank you very much. And thank you, Professor Ashton, for doing this program today. I have a question for you, and that is, in 2002, Hanukkah followed Thanksgiving by one day, but I haven't heard any mention of that. Now, I understand it converges absolutely on Thanksgiving this year. So is that why all this is, this holiday and Hanukkah is so much spoken about, because it actually falls on the same day?
Yes, actually, we light the first candle tonight, which is the day before Thanksgiving,
right,
which is exceptionally early. Yeah. It is surprising that when it's come close to Thanksgiving in earlier years, people haven't made such a to-do about it. But this year, it's big news.
It's big news. Okay. I remember having Thanksgiving turkey on the 28th of November in 2002, and the very next night having latkes. So that's why it was. I remember that it was very striking. And of course, this year it's even a tougher holiday to cook for.
Right.
I've been hearing about sweet potato latkes.
Mm-hmm. Probably a good idea.
Yeah. Right.
Thank you very much.
Okay, Marcia. Thanks so much for calling. And Professor, we're speaking about food. Let's talk about the role food has played in shaping Hanukkah festivities and some of the foods associated with it, in addition, maybe just the latkes.
Well, latkes come from Eastern Europe, where potatoes were plentiful this time of year. That's about all that was growing was potatoes. And so, and it's a meal that anybody can afford. Anybody can put together potatoes and onions, an egg, a little bit of flour, salt and pepper, and you've got a latke. But that's just Eastern Europe. People in other parts of the world eat all kinds of things. The only thing that's important about a Hanukkah food is that it be fried. So that leaves you plenty of options. A colleague of mine who is a Spanish professor is frying plantains. In Israel, they eat jelly donuts, and bakeries at Hanukkah are stacked with jelly donuts because everybody eats them. And so you can really do whatever you like as long as it's a fried food.
Now, why does it have to be a fried food? Because of the oil?
Exactly.
So could you explain that just for those who may not know, the oil
sure.
that we were talking about? Yeah.
So it's the oil that was the miracle of that little drop of oil in the menorah when the temple was rededicated that lasted for 8 days. And so commemorating that, we eat foods that are fried in oil.
Okay, just to keep it clear. So has this, you mentioned something about the reform, but have the changes in Hanukkah as it becomes this major holiday pervaded all the Orthodox, the Conservative, and Reformed Jews? I mean, has it been, you know, pretty much the same for all?
It's really an interesting question. By and large, it's the same across the board. However, Orthodox Jews will usually send their children to Jewish day schools rather than to public schools. So there isn't a sense of needing to give the children something so they don't envy their Christian classmates. But they do fill their lives with Jewish practice, and that's really their goal. So children will do crafts in school for Hanukkah and then bring them home, and it will be part of the family's Hanukkah celebration. Each child will very likely have their own menorah and learn to say the blessings. So it's across the board.
We have some Manuel in Coral Gables wants to talk about the commercialization of Hanukkah. Hi, Manuel.
Hey, thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
Good conversation. Curious to know, as a Christian fellow, we typically tend to feel inundated with such a high commercial, in-your-face, go-purchase, go-buy gifts. Is that the same case in the Jewish community?
It's really not, because there is this ambivalence about gift-giving at Hanukkah, and because Hanukkah moves around so much, that Black Friday isn't always really relevant. This year, Black Friday will be in the third day of Hanukkah already. So it's really not quite the same. And the other thing about it, as you know, because I'm part of, I watch the same commercials you do, and very often they have Christmas music playing in the commercials. So it is almost signaling to Jewish Americans the buying is for Christians.
Unfortunately, Manuel's phone call just dropped off, so I don't know if he has any further questions. You can call back if you do. Let's move on to Gary in Fort Lauderdale. Hi, Gary. You're on Topical Currents. Gary? Gary, are you there?
This is Stan, if you're speaking to me.
Oh, okay, Stan. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Stan.
I was sitting there listening, saying, Gary, I'm not Gary. But anyway, just to touch on a little relevance as far as the oil goes, was there any significance throughout the years of what the oil represents with the latkes cooking in? And also, the Festival of Lights, where does that come in? And I'll take my answers off the air.
Okay, thank you, Stan. Well, we've talked about the oil, but perhaps Stan didn't hear. So if you want to re-explain it.
Okay, so the oil is really from the oil lamps that were the menorahs in the temple in Jerusalem, in the ancient temple that was rededicated, which is what we celebrate at Hanukkah. So commemorating the miracle of the oil, that little bit that lasted for 8 days, we eat foods fried in oil. And the Festival of Lights is a fascinating term. And yes, this is a another word for Hanukkah, because we light lights every night for 8 nights. And it's a holiday that comes in the darkest season of the year, and we light lights. And so it's another word for the holiday is Festival of Lights. And which is, this is not the only religion that has Festival of Lights in dark times of the year.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking with Professor Diane Ashton. Excuse me. She teaches religion studies at Rowan University, and her book is entitled Hanukkah in America, A History. And we need to take a short break. Gary, we'll get to you. I see you're still waiting. And a few other people will get to you right after this break. And welcome back to today's Topical Currents. Bonnie Berman here with you, and we're visiting with Professor Diane Ashton. Her book is entitled Hanukkah in America, A History. On this, the first, this evening, Hanukkah will begin. And Professor, let's see, Gary in Fort Lauderdale has a question about the Maccabees. Gary, you're on the air with Professor Ashton. Thank you.
How do you do, Professor? My question is regarding the persona of Judah Maccabee. Was he, in fact, an individual or a series of letters that was indicative of a certain mindset?
You're asking me if Judah Maccabee was an actual person?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, because I'd heard that, in fact, it is almost like an anagram, and in fact, not an individual, but representative of other aspects of the holiday itself.
I think that's a great interpretation, but we have four documents that are dealing with the Maccabean Revolt. There are four different books of the Maccabees, and the first one, the first book of Maccabees, is the one that's the most historically presented. The others are more interpretive about the meaning of the meaning of the revolt and how the Maccabees were martyrs. But no, the Maccabees did exist. Judah Maccabee did exist.
Okay, and a quick question: just can you just touch upon the difference between a menorah and a Hanukkah?
It's the same thing.
And I'll take that off the air.
A menorah can be... The menorah in the temple is a seven-day menorah. A Hanukkah is a menorah for 8 days that's used at Hanukkah.
Thank you.
Okay, Gary, thanks so much for calling. Okay. And Professor, tell us about the role of Jewish women and mothers in popularizing Hanukkah.
They had a very big role in it, in a number of different ways. They did it as women, as teachers in religious schools, where they would create Hanukkah festivals in the schools, in Jewish schools. They were important as members of women's organizations who promoted Hanukkah among their members, either working with congregations in the Reform branch of things. The National Federation of Temple Sisterhoods worked with Reform congregations to create Hanukkah festivals for children and in those all of those synagogues, but also urged their members to create Hanukkah observances in their homes that were fun occasions for their families. But other denominations also relied on women. The Women's League for Conservative Judaism was another national women's organization whose members actively promoted the importance of creating inspiring, warm, loving Hanukkah celebrations in families, and so urged all of their women members to do that.
Would you say, and this may or may not be something you know, would you say that if the mother did not bring Hanukkah into the house, that generally the kids did not, that the family didn't celebrate it? I mean, if she was not actively engaged.
It's an interesting point because, of course, Hanukkah, of course, Judaism makes most of its demands on men, in terms of ritual observance, but the reality of family life in the U.S. with men working long days away from home and working a long work week and often not getting home until after sundown, particularly on these short days of the year when Hanukkah falls, then it is really up to the women to create Hanukkah festivals. Certainly, if it's going to be something that is going to have food involved, if you're going to have a special meal, this is something that women do.
And I'm going to give the number again. We're going to get to you, Steve, in Miami Lakes in a second. It's 1-800-743-9576. 1-800-743-9576. Hanukkah in America, a history. We're speaking with Professor Diane Ashton. And let's talk to Steve in Miami Lakes. Hi, Steve.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I'm a big fan of your show, so it's very exciting for me.
Oh, great. Well, welcome.
I was wondering if Professor Ashton could clarify something. I've read many times that the ancient Hebrew people were able to corral their many observances by watching phases of the moon, since they were not all in one location. Hanukkah was like new moon in Capricorn, or Passover was full moon in Aries, that kind of thing. And I was curious how Hanukkah had drifted so far off course that now we are seeing Thanksgiving and Hanukkah on the same day.
Well, Hanukkah, the Jewish calendar is basically a lunar calendar. there are interpolations that are made to keep the holidays relatively in the season when they're supposed to be, but that will float relative to the U.S. calendar, which is a solar calendar. So they're never going to match up perfectly. But the Jewish calendar is basically a lunar calendar.
So it, I wasn't incorrect in the text that I had read. I mean, there actually is a full moon in, I don't know, March or April, whatever.
Oh, sure.
And that is mm-hmm. where you would observe Passover normally.
Mm-hmm.
So only the calendar dates are, according to the Jewish calendar, are floating, not to the U.S. calendar. Did I get that right?
No, I think it's the reverse. The dates in the
Well, I'm a good listener anyway. Thank you for answering my call.
Okay, Steve. Thanks so much for calling.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And we'll move along to Richard in North Miami. Hi, Richard. Welcome to Topical Currents.
Yes, thank you very much for taking my call. I just wanted to make a comment. You know, in the past 10, 15 years, you've seen that Chabad Lubavitch, as one of the Hasidic groups, puts menorahs all over the state, all over the city, in many different countries. And I've got to admit, it's been something that I would definitely consider a thing of Jewish pride, that Jews can sit there and, number one, not be afraid like 50, 60, 70 years ago, and number two, that people can have something to associate with that's definitely a thing of a positive aspect of Judaism. You know, that everybody has a place and that their own holidays can be dealt with in a public way as well, not just in a private way like it was in times of anywhere from the Inquisition up to the Holocaust and even, you know, with other anti-Semitic times.
Yeah, that's a great point. Professor?
I think that's absolutely right. Certainly Chabad's point is that we can be proud of this. We can be comfortable publicly being Jews, and we should. Part of the rules for Hanukkah is to publicize the miracle. And Jewish law says you can only make that public sort of in your own home if you're in a dangerous circumstance. But it's a miracle of God, and we should let it be known. And so Chabad has really taken the lead in saying, you know, we don't have to hide in the U.S. We can be proud and public in what we're doing.
Not just in the U.S., literally all over the world. That's the
yes.
beautiful part about it.
Mm-hmm.
That's the really beautiful
mm-hmm.
part about it.
Okay, Richard, thank you so much
thank
for calling.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
You know, I was thinking, Professor, I was going to mention that in most communities in South Florida, you know, the Christmas lights are hung, the manger scenes are built, but right alongside there are these huge menorahs. How recent is this development? How long has this been going on? I don't remember.
I think Chabad started doing this in the 1970s. And not surprisingly, it did involve a Supreme Court case. And the court decided that when you see a Christmas tree and menorah next to each other, what they're symbolizing is religious freedom, which is something that American Jews value very much. But when a Christmas tree is in a church or with a manger scene, then it's a symbol of a particular religion. But neither one of these, neither the tree nor the menorah, are an image of a god. And so they're when they're together, especially, they are symbols of cultural and religious freedom.
I was going to ask you, what about a lot of Jewish people that I have known or know of also get Christmas trees? I mean, they do a little menorah or a Hanukkah bush or whatever it's called, but they also have Christmas trees. How common is that?
It's not very common, but it's something that Jews have done for a very long time, never the majority of people,
mm-hmm.
but there's always been a small minority of people who said, you know, it's pretty, it smells good, why not?
It's messy.
Yes.
Okay, let's talk to Raj. He's in Miami Gardens. Raj, welcome to Topical Currents.
Hello, yes, this is Raj.
Go ahead.
Yes, I know I missed, while I was on the phone, I missed the explanation. I'd like to find out when on the lunar calendar is Hanukkah celebrated? I'm a Hindu, and we celebrate our festival lights on the new moon. And I was just trying to relate the two.
Okay, yeah. We have a kind of rough Raj?
Yes.
Yeah, are you driving or something? The connection is...
Yes, I'm in my car.
Okay, did you hear his question, Professor?
Yes, I did.
Okay, go ahead.
I wish I knew the answer to it. I'm sorry. I know that we have a lunar calendar. The Jewish calendar is a lunar calendar, but I don't know where Hanukkah is placed in terms of the phases of the moon. But I know that it is something that is built into the Jewish calendar.
I see. All right, I appreciate that. I'm going to go do some research on the internet.
You'll let us know.
Let me know.
Thank you.
Okay, Raj, thank you.
Bye-bye. Now.
Bye-bye. We're speaking with Professor Diane Ashton. Her latest book is Hanukkah in America, A History on Today's Topical Currents. One more short break, and we'll be back and take your calls. And welcome back to today's Hanukkah edition of Topical Currents. Bonnie Berman here. We're speaking with Professor Diane Ashton from Rowan University, and her latest book is entitled Hanukkah in America, A History. By the way, we couldn't find a website for you, Professor. Do you have one?
No, you have to go to my university's website, rowan.edu.
Okay, so just rowan.edu, mm-hmm. and then look for Diane Ashton.
Right.
Okay, and that's D-I-A-N-N-E. And then A-S-H-T-O-N.
Right.
And we'll have links to your book and to you on our website and on the Topical Currents Facebook page.
Wonderful.
Yes. So you found that different areas of the U.S. celebrate differently. Is there anything distinctive, and I'd like to ask about some of the most notable, but is there anything distinctive about Hanukkah in South Florida? It has such a large Jewish population.
It does. I really haven't found things tremendously distinctive about South Florida, but I would suspect that the recipes will be influenced by some of the Spanish flavors that are so prevalent down there, that are so delicious. A colleague of mine who is a Spanish professor is making fried plantains for her Hanukkah, and I wouldn't be surprised if they start appearing in your neighborhood, too.
You know, you may be right, and there's a very large Jewish-Cuban population in South Florida. So I don't know if you're listening and you want to call in with any foods that you do differently on Topical Currents. You still have time to call. It's 1-800-743-9576. If you have an answer to this question about distinctive South Florida Hanukkah foods, 1-800-743-9576. And we'll talk to Orr. He's in Coral Gables. Hi, Orr. You're on Topical Currents.
How are you?
Good. How
Professor,
are you?
Professor, really quickly, are there any marked differences in the celebration of Hanukkah with people that come from the Iberian Peninsula versus the Eastern Europeans?
I think it's mostly in the foods. The potato latke is definitely an Eastern European food. But as I said, anything that is fried is suitable for a Hanukkah meal. So any fried food that is traditionally a favorite from the Spanish Iberian Peninsula, that would be what you would find going on.
Great. All right. Well, thank you so much.
Okay, Orr. Thanks so much for calling. I was wondering, we talked about, Jewish people having Christmas trees. Statistics, I read that they show that many Jews are in interfaith marriages. Do you think this has affected how Hanukkah is celebrated?
I think interfaith families face a very special conundrum about Hanukkah and Christmas. And it really depends on their own personal commitments and their relationship with their families, their extended families. They really have to find their own way forward. I know of one family that has overwhelmingly Jewish practice. The children consider themselves Jews, but they do have a Christmas tree. They love a Christmas tree, so that's it. So what happens to that? I mean, what does that actually mean in a Jewish household? does it have the same meaning that it does in a Christian household? I would doubt it.
Interesting. I think that's ready. Anna has some information, I guess, about the Cuban Jewish dinner. Let's see. Anna's on three. Hi, Anna. You're on the air. Tell us. Anna?
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air.
Oh, my name is Alma. I'm a Cuban Jew, Juban. And for Hanukkah tonight, for the first night of Hanukkah, we're going to have matzo ball soup, brisket, arroz con pollo, potato latkes, and lobster kugel.
And what was the last thing? What was the last thing?
Russian kugel.
Kugel pudding.
Oh, kugel, okay.
Typical Jewish also.
Right.
So we're a combination of Cuban and Jewish, still.
Okay, any comment, Professor?
That's fascinating. I would like to know what your family's heritage is.
Oh, we have a big mixture. My parents came from Poland. I was born in Cuba. My husband was born in Cuba. My children was born one in Israel, one in New York, one in Miami. And our children married children from Colombia, London, and America. So we're a very mixed family.
That's fascinating. So you get recipes from everywhere.
Right. So we mix everybody's culture together.
Wonderful.
Great. Okay, Anna, thank you for calling.
Thank you. Bye.
Okay, bye-bye. And let's see. We have a Juban chef who's calling in with some ideas. Ella, hi. Welcome to Topical Currents.
Yes, hi. So glad that you could take my call. I love the topic today. I'm always cooking and always listening to you. My grandmother went to Cuba from Turkey when she was 5, and I was born in Cuba, and my parents left Cuba when I was 3 months old. Being inspired in Cuba, I think one of the main things that sticks out when you talk about the plantains that your colleague there was mentioning, one of the things we make are arañitas de plátano, which are basically finely shredded green plantains, and then we drop them in oil just like you would a latke and fry them up, salt them, and they're crazy good. You can even spice them up with garlic. So that's one of the things that we make in addition to all the other, you know, things that go along with Hanukkah, the sultaniyot, and all the other fried things that you can make during Hanukkah.
That sounds wonderful.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Yeah, and all your comments are spot on to the author. It's great to have you on talking about this so timely, and hope to hear you again in 2070.
I hope you do.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ella.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And we have somebody holding. Paul, can you ask Richard who's on line two, because it doesn't have a name? Okay, let me, I hope you know that you're on the air. I don't know your name.
Hi there.
Hi, good, okay.
Happy Hanukkah, Bonnie. This is your friend Warren.
Oh, hi, happy Hanukkah to you.
Happy Hanukkah. Richard told me you got this year's dreadful card from me.
I did, thank you so much.
You're welcome. So, and Danforth the Dragon thanks you.
Yes.
I think at this time it's important to mention that the great miracle of Hanukkah that we celebrate is not just that the oil burned for the 8 days, but that a very few, relatively few people stood against the entire Greek Empire who tried to eradicate, to extinguish the Jewish religion and Jewish culture. And a lot of good people suffered, and some horribly died or were tortured rather than abandon, betray Judaism. And so we celebrate that, especially timely when we think of the fact that there are people who, just by ridiculing Judaism, one of them, a professor who appeared on this very program, just kind of trying to show how silly religion is, that maybe the Lord knows something that a lot of so-called scientists don't. Maybe there's something to it, and we should remember at this time how our people suffered and died until others stood against amazing odds.
Okay, let's see if the professor has any comment.
Well, certainly the Maccabean victory was seen as a miracle, and that the miracle of the oil was supposed to signify that God fought with these small band of people in order to allow them to be victorious.
Oh, I think his... Okay. So, let's see. We can take maybe one more call. Mark in Fort Lauderdale has an interesting comment. I don't know exactly what it is. Mark, welcome to Topical Currents.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi. I was raised Jewish, and I've always been kind of skeptical. At Passover, I'm the wise kid who's always getting in trouble.
Right.
Well, my theory about Hanukkah is quite simple. The temple is attacked, and everything's wrecked, and it's ruined, and the rabbis go in to kind of take account of what is left over, and that's when they realize they only have enough oil left for one day. Am I on track here?
Well, it was Maccabees. It wasn't rabbis, but go ahead.
Well, the Maccabees go in. Jewish people, they're all alike. Anyway,
yeah.
So there's always the one Jewish guy who's kind of a pain in the butt, and I say that as a Jew, so it's okay.
Okay, so Mark, we're almost out of time, so I have to ask you. Okay, go ahead.
So the leader of the temple says, yeah, we've only got enough for one day. Why don't you go out and get us oil for some more days, right? So it takes him 8 days to come back. He comes back. He says, I brought some more oil. And they go, oh, yeah, this is still going. I guess we made it. It must have been a miracle. Yeah, I think it's just an accounting error. That's my punchline. Kind of got lost there. I'm sorry.
Okay, Mark, thanks for calling.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, Professor, any comment on that, the accounting error?
Well, I think that Hanukkah is a fun holiday, and we're told by the prophet Zechariah to sing and rejoice at Hanukkah. And this means that it's also a time for puzzles and games and good times. So
and dreidels.
And dreidels, yes.
Well, we want to thank you. Professor Diane Ashton is an author and professor of religion studies and the former director of the American Studies Program at Rowan University in New Jersey. And her latest book is entitled Hanukkah in America, A History. Thanks so much for joining us today. It was fun.
I had a very good time being with you, and happy Thanksgiving and happy Hanukkah.
Thank you, and the same to you. And that is today's edition of Topical Currents. Thank you so much for joining us, and thanks for your calls. Our producer is Richard Ives, with technical direction by online producer Paul Leary. We have free audio archives and downloads at our website, WLRN.org. And more information, including author and book links, photos, and discussion at the Topical Currents Facebook page and at WLRN.org. And, of course, the links for today's book, Hanukkah in America, A History, will also be there. On Monday, Joseph Cooper returns and will look at Florida's battle over Common Core standards. And in the meantime, have a wonderful Thanksgiving. And if you celebrate, a very happy Hanukkah. A happy Thanksgiving, or whatever else you may be celebrating. And stay tuned for Here and Now, up next from NPR News. It's been a pleasure being with you. Thanks.